The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. We're closing in to Christmas. I'm your host, Strigger. It's always joined by my man, Dylan. Dylan, I'm not really in the Christmas spirit yet, hoping that it will eventually show up. How about you?
I think we need some snow to solidify this Christmas season. Yeah. If we could get the weather turned down, I always say this, whenever anybody asks me about this, I always say I like the cold weather better because it's such a home feeling. Like if there's snow on the ground, you can make some hot chocolate, you know, you can put the Christmas lights up, you can sing Christmas songs, and all kinds of cool stuff you could do on Christmas. You know, what's your favorite Christmas song, Strigger?
Oh my! I can tell you that my least favorite one is Last Christmas, because full disclosure, a good friend of mine and I, we always have this bet, and it's the same bet each and every year.
Okay.
And the bet is, whoever gets to listen to Last Christmas at first throughout the year has lost.
Oh.
Dylan, do you know in which month I lost this year?
January.
Close. It was March.
Oh, how did you listen to that in March?
Well, during the first lockdown here in Germany, I was driving in my car and I had the radio on, and people could wish for a song to be played, and I wasn't really paying attention, and apparently someone wanted to listen to Last Christmas, and it was too late to turn it off, so I lost.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What does he win?
Well, it's just a bet for fun, you know? It's just for a year.
Oh, okay. Well, listen, beer is important. That's nothing to... You know, that's no laughing matter, Strigger, so I can understand your disappointment.
The thing is, in recent years, the bet has gotten real unfair because I'm someone who loves going to Christmas markets, and obviously the risk of listening to Last Christmas on Christmas markets is much higher than if you don't go to Christmas markets, like my friend really doesn't do. So maybe we'll have to think of a new bet or of a new system. Maybe I get three strikes or something like that.
I think that's fair. You know, you have the disadvantage, I would say, in this scenario, especially as a teacher. You know, I'm sure they'll probably play some music at the school, maybe, like, as well, you know, around the time of Christmas. So.
Oh, yeah. Some kid recently went out of class and just started singing Last Christmas, and a little thing died inside of me because I thought I have lost. Oh, no. Then I remembered, oh, I'd already lost in March, so.
Now I'm going to make Last Christmas my ringtone, so if somebody calls us during the show, I'm going to make sure to play it turn it up very loud every day now, every time we record, especially on January 4th, when we are 5th or whenever we get together for that show. I'm going to put that on, and we'll see if you can survive the year, so survive the Last Christmas on there.
What's your favorite Christmas song?
Oh, I mean, I like all of them. When I was a really young kid, we had these Christmas lights that actually played music, and I always loved those. That I was so enthralled by these as a kid. It's like lights that play music. Whoa. But I like them, all of them, you know, Deck the Halls, you know, Jingle Bell Rock.
Yeah.
All of those. All of the classics. Christmas, you know, O Tannenbaum.
Yeah.
Right now, we gotta love that one. Right now, that's like the unofficial Christmas song of this show. So you know, everybody likes Christmas trees, and so we gotta celebrate, people. It taught us a new language all the way over here in America. So let's go with that one, we could say. Oh, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? That's a classic. That was based on a Christmas special. They still play that every year, and it's like 80 years.
Yeah, right. I really like Feliz Navidad.
Oh, that's a great song, too.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom has this CD. I think she's owned it for over 30 years now, the Bonnie M. Christmas album. And Feliz Navidad, of course, is one song on there. So I've always listened to that when I was a kid, and I always liked it when I was a kid because it just had this nice rhythm and this nice tone.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's a good one. That's an upbeat song right there. I can buy that because some of the songs are slower, and stuff like that. But that was more of an upbeat one, so you can have fun. That's a Christmas music is uplifting in general, though. Outside of White Christmas or something like a really slow like Frank Sinatra type of song or something on there. But yeah, all of those are good. Oh, you have Mariah Carey. All I Want for Christmas Is You, a classic. My Chemical Romance covered that one time. I that was on a special edition of one of their albums or something when they had that there. Santa Baby, that's another one. But there's all kinds of Christmas songs, Trigger. I'm sure there's some. That's going to be my new quest this year, to find other language Christmas songs out here, like from unexpected countries. I'm on the hunt right now for these things. So that's my thing. But, I think the greatest gift of all on Christmas is when you win your battles against corporate America, which I...
What a great segue.
That's why I'm a professional, my friend, here, because one of the hottest topics, all of our episodes are fun and great and everyone loves them, but the most important thing that happened last week was my snafu with Mattress Firm and my feud that I had with them, where they delivered
Part
the wrong
two
size.
Of the saga.
Yes, that's the final chapter of this one.
Is it though? that's what appears on the screen in the end. Is it though?
Well, if they don't give me my refund, there will be another chapter to this. But yes, so I finally delivered. They finally delivered this thing after weeks of haggling and saying they delivered it, and then it turning out to be the wrong size. But then they delivered it anyway. Then they said they delivered it, but they didn't deliver it. But then they finally did it. So I walk up to the office one day, and I just want to say, to put over myself my wrestler strength, somebody I was talking to was telling me, because I was telling this person about I was complaining to them about all this, pretty much, and saying, can you believe this with the mattress? And they were like, she was like, I had to get a lot of help with mine when I ordered my mattress through the mail. I had to have like two different people to unload it and all of that. And I said, I don't need any help. And she said, oh, I think you're going to need some help. And you know what? I carried that big bastard all the way from the office of my apartment to my apartment on my own. And so I have to put myself over for that here. The maintenance guy opened the door for me, but that's the only help I had when that happened, because it was a big box. It was like the box came up to basically my chest and, just standing on the ground, and it was pretty heavy. Even though it was a smaller size than I wanted, if it had been the fuller size, I would have been even heavier. I don't know if I could have gotten it. But I carried it all by myself, and I brought it in here. And just yesterday, I have the paper right in front of me. Do you hear this paper?
I'm fluttering
right now. I fluttered it for all the people listening. And I have it right here, the truck delivery report. And I found out an interesting tidbit here. When they come, if you, the listener, ever order a mattress from Mattress Firm, this is what you have to look forward to if you get the wrong size accidentally. When they come and pick it up, they send you a message like a delivery message. But instead of just saying, hey, we're picking it up or a redo or a reorder or whatever, it says your mattress and then the order of -1 on there. And that's exactly what it was. I now have -1 mattresses in my house, Striga. So I have won against Mattress Firm, and you didn't believe me. You didn't know if I could do it. I don't know if anybody believed me. No lawyers came to my aid to try and sue them like I called out for last week. So that was the one negative. I was hoping we'd have some legal counsel, but I didn't need them, thankfully. I did it all by myself, Striga. Like I'm a big boy now. I did it. I beat corporate America.
So proud of you. Dude, what a great ending to this saga.
Midas mattresses. they have to give me my review. But they said it would take 2 to 5 days, so I'm giving them time. But I still am putting out the call for legal counsel. If that is out there, I still don't know if that's even possible. But I just want to make sure all my options are open, Striga.
That's great, though. You won the case. The mattress firm lost. And, they did the job. And, who also lost something, apparently in the middle of 2020, apparently the big dog Shuji Ishikawa lost the book of All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Breaking news right now.
Breaking news. I've read this, by the way, thanks to the Twitter user Shut Up Patrick. Patrick with a K, not with a CK. He showed me the site, the Reddit site where it was posted, and it was an interview that's directing to PW Insider. I usually don't really check American forums, news boards, anything that of that sorts or news sites. I'm usually strict to the Japanese pages, so I didn't really pick that up, but luckily Patrick did. So this is from PW Insider writer Oliver Taylor, and he had this interview with the co-owner of Global Syndicate Wrestling, a promotion that is starting in 2021, and they have this main event set up for their first show of Alex Hammerstone against Joe During. And the co-owner, Brendan Ascari, I'm not really sure to pronounce that one, he said that they wanted to bring in Zuwama for a show, and, quote here, "The Zuwama idea is something that we're toying around with. We've already spoken to Tajiri, who's the head booker for All Japan. He definitely wants to work with us. We've gotten all the things figured out." So in all this melee that All Japan has been over the last couple of months and weeks, we've all pointed the blame to big dog Shuji Ishikawa. But maybe, Dylan, we should point the blame to Tajiri.
Shuji Ishikawa, a man unjustly blamed for crimes he did not commit, when, as I predicted, Tajiri was the one at fault all along. No one has blamed Tajiri more than me, I would say, in All Japan, especially if you listen to our tag league shows on the Patreon website. But with the here in All Japan, I've always said Tajiri is one of my least favorite workers, and now he is also one of my least favorite bookers. And I should have known. I wish I'd pushed this conspiracy theory forward a lot sooner. But unfortunately, the big dog has caught heat. And let it be known that Tajiri is the one to blame for everything wrong in all of our lives. And hopefully he will leave All Japan soon. But I was really surprised when I heard this, though. To be honest with you, it really wasn't anything talked about or anything by anybody. Everybody just kind of just said it was Ishikawa that had this. But mm-hmm. Tajiri is here now, and that's what it said.
So I'm just guessing here. I don't know when this exactly happened, but I'm guessing it happened sometime around the summer. Because you can really look at the first half of All Japan's year, and we've been over this topic a couple of times,
yep,
and say that they had a good start of the year, even throughout the pandemic, we called them out as one of the top groups of the no fans era in Japanese wrestling.
Yes.
But still, at the tail end of June, when they did the show, the Triple Crown of Wilderness, where Shotaro Ashino got his shot against Zuwama, we could already see some cracks in that first good months that All Japan had this year. So I'm guessing that around this time, the change of the booking might have happened, or at the end of August, right before the Champion Carnival, because it feels like that they took some new directions there too. For example, with also elevating Atsuki Aoyagi and Hokuto Omori more and pushing them very much from their rookie status up to are being proper parts of the roster.
Yeah, you know, I could totally buy that. I think it could have been around there. I think the first one would have been logical, except Ishikawa got the title shot in July. But right. If you remember, they were also doing the stuff like, you know, the thing with Yoshitatsu and Sego Tachibana was getting booked a lot.
Right.
And we haven't seen him lately, you know, in All Japan. So there, it feels like maybe there was some kind of change around July, August, things like that. And who knows the reason why, you know, maybe the big dog himself just wasn't, you know, he was a wrestler and he didn't want to deal with all of the hassles of being a wrestler and a booker at the same time.
That's something, by the way, that Suwama has dealt with too. He was a director for All Japan for a long time. He was not the booker, but he was working behind the scenes. And he dropped that job again because he wanted to focus on being a wrestler.
Even stuff like look at Jun Akiyama, right? He was in a power position in All Japan, and look how refreshed he's been since he's left that and went to DDT. You know, it's just one of those things. You know, the booker has a very unique set of stresses and hassles that you just wouldn't have if you're just a wrestler. So it's like that can wear on somebody, especially if you are a wrestler, and especially if you're a high level wrestler like Ishikawa, who is still a main event level talent for All Japan. I can understand why that might have been too much for him, but you know, Tajiri is also a wrestler. For him, he's like, look, I have experience in Smash and Wrestling New Classic. Give me the book, big dog. And he talked his way into it.
Yeah. Man, it's All Japan feels such a weird company this year. And the change in booking definitely is a very good explanation for that. Mm-hmm. And if you look at some things that they did after, like in the late summer stages, Tajiri started to defend his EWA Intercontinental title in All Japan three times. He did in 2019, the first time, and two times in 2020 against Akira Francesco and Utamaro. They've done this Yoshitatsu deal now, where you said he had Seigo Tachibana in, and Yusuke Okada was part of that stable too. But he also has this Garo TV title where he had some matches with. They've brought in guys like Utamaro at some points in time. The Lance and guys are still there. There's a lot going on in All Japan. And you really, really need someone who aligns the pieces back together to form a promotion where you feel like there is a clear direction. And that's not what it feels like right now.
Yeah. You know, it feels like kind of a holding pattern these last few months, you know, because like we said on the last episode, it feels like nothing's really happened in like the last 6 months since Tajiri was taking over. You know, I was thinking, remember in around, this might have been even sooner than we might have think, because remember when the Infants first came in, they had this great storyline with Ashino and Kento going on, and suddenly there was this sudden shift to where Ashino got the title shot. And we were like, what is this all about?
You know? They also had this deal where Yoshitatsu tapped out Suwama and nothing ever happened.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, see, so a lot of crazy stuff happened that maybe we could trace it back to that little time. See, so something was going on and maybe we just didn't know about it back then, but that would be a good explanation for how things have come along. I guess my only hope is that maybe, like you said, we can consolidate everything going on in All Japan right now into Tajiri's vision into something coherent, you know, and something progress, you know, some progression in the company, which I think is desperately needed more than anything,
given his team in the Real World Tag League, the ECW nostalgia team with Masato Tanaka. I don't really have high hopes for any progressive ideas or for any out-of-the-box ideas with Tajiri, to be quite honest.
That totally explains that, by the way, because that was one of my biggest mysteries of this entire deal, is like, who would possibly give a damn about ECW in Japan? And this makes perfect sense.
Yeah, Tajiri, obviously.
Yeah, like, this makes perfect sense. Like, now we know who cares about ECW in Japan. It's him. It's the one who was in ECW. Of course, the only person who cares about it, probably, in Japan.
Masato Tanaka is there and just thinks, what the fuck am I even doing here?
Oh my God, this whole tag league was something else. they were quite a performance that ECW brought to the table.
Before we go to the tag league, Dylan, there's one thing I want to still bring up because I want to hammer home this point. And first of all, I want to personally congratulate you and WH Park that Jiro Ikemen Kuroshio is now finally gone.
Finally, after all of these years. It feels like it's been years since they said he signed to WWE, and I was wondering, is this guy ever going to leave?
Yeah.
And, you know, the funny thing is, I wasn't a fan of his by any means, and I kind of really started to dislike him by the end, but he did get to live his dream of being in the Champion Carnival, and that might have been the only reason he stayed. Like, that may have been a shoot string that, you know, he did his deed in the Champion Carnival. He got put over the Triple Crown champion for no reason.
Yes.
And then walked on home with no resolution.
And that's one thing that at the point in time I was completely expecting that Jiro would beat Zuwama. Because, of course, I thought, well, they're not going to do this as a title match down the line. Right? That would be the logical thing to do.
They still can.
And the... No.
In NXT, Suwama walks through those doors to the... they call it something else now, so they don't even call it the Performance Center. It's like the Capital One Wrestling Center or something that. Suwama's walking down those doors with Triple H. They'll probably play like a Metallica song or something when he walks out.
Yeah.
So, that would be awesome, though, actually.
Apparently, Tajiri is responsible for this stroke of genius. To have the Triple Crown champion lose to a guy that won't and can't return the favor. I can't even wrap my head around even thinking that that would be a good idea.
And this is the world champion of the promotion. This isn't just like, you know, like, I mean... Anybody, it's kind of goofy, like it's kind of a dumb idea, but especially if it's the Triple Crown champion, you know, you're literally wasting this man dropping a fall for no reason, for literally no reason, other than I guess maybe it was a thank you to Jiro for, I mean, listen, that was his buddy in Wrestling New Classic, so he's like, look, I knew you from then, I knew you from Wrestle 1, so you could go over the Triple Crown champion, my friend, and... That might have been the only purpose it served, because it served no purpose for All Japan or Suwama or anyone else. So, stroke of genius, you call it that, some people call it that, and I call it something else. But it definitely happened.
It happened. My God. So, let's look at this real world tag league. The first day on November 18th, I really liked. There were three matches that I would call good with Jake Lee and Koji Omoto against Izanagi and Shigeru Irie, Kumarashi and Shotaro Oshino against the Violent Giants of Shuji Ishikawa and Zuwama, and the main of Abdullah Kobayashi and Daisuke Sakimoto against Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi. Then, if we go further, those shows were hardly ever exciting. But they had some more good matches, and sometimes even great matches. For example, the one on November 23rd, Jake Lee and Koji Iwamoto against the Violent Giants really was a great match, in my opinion. If we go further to November 29, great matches. Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi against Roji Sai and Yoshitatsu was pretty good. But not outstanding. I don't know about you, Dylan. I really thought that the final stretch would get much better, but it just never hit another gear, in my opinion.
Yeah, it was just a really kind of ho-hum type of tournament, I felt like, to be honest with you. I liked some of the matches. I think to me, I really liked the next Dream Team of Kento and Yuma, and particularly Yuma. I think was my personal MVP of the tournament, because somewhat similar to the New Japan Tag League, the ones that actually impressed me, because in this tournament, you're not really looking for match quality outside of maybe the final, you know, and, you know, he was also involved in that, obviously, but for the most part, it wasn't really about match quality. The people that impressed me the most were the ones that I sensed high effort from. And those were people like Yuma, Izanagi. I thought had a really good tournament in his matches. I enjoyed what he brought to the table as a unique style. And, you know, when I watched him, Jin Team, too, I was really impressed with Jake in the tournament. Again, I think he's somebody that I always enjoy watching. You know, some people, you say what you want about his presence or whatever, but mm-hmm. as a wrestler, I really think Jake is one of the top talents, not just in All Japan, but, you know, he's one of the better heavyweights in the country. You know, even in the Champion Carnival, he was the one that was the most consistent guy throughout the tournament, in my opinion. He didn't have the high highs of the Kento and Zeus match, but he was the one that brought it every show. And here in the same tournament, he and Iwamoto had a really good run, too. Right. And, so I really enjoyed that team. That's another guy, Iwamoto. And the funny thing is, if you look at the matches, Iwamoto was often getting more shine than Jake, actually. Yeah. Even in some of their matches, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later when we talk about the final two.
Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, one match I want to point out, too, is from December 4 from Nagoya. Pretty nice crowd for that kind of tour stop, 422 fans for All Japan. And the main event of that show was Kento Miyahara and Yuma Oyagi against the Violent Giants. It was a 24-minute match, and I really thought that that match was probably one of the best of the tournament up until that point.
I agree.
Because Yuma Aoyagi got a lot of shine in the tournament, in that match, but I think they kind of dropped the ball here, because if Yuma Aoyagi is challenging Zuwama for the Triple Crown and Kento Miyahara and him are going for the tag title too in early January, why didn't they go all the way here and have Yuma Aoyagi get a pinfall victory over Zuwama? Because I don't really sense that a lot of people buy Yuma Aoyagi as a challenger to Zuwama at this point in 2021.
I completely agree with that. Unfortunately, there was just too much done. You know, he really wasn't pushed at all throughout the year until this tournament, which is kind of, you know, if you remember last year's tournament, he was in a very similar role. Like, this was before his turn, obviously, on Kento, yeah. But he did a great job in that tag league, too, as, you know, the under guy of Kento. And now we're here, once again, in 2021, he's getting a title shot. But like you said, he didn't even get to pin the champion, and now it's going to be really hard to buy him as the one to end the Suwama reign, which is unfortunate, because I love him as a talent. I think he's awesome, and he's the one that, honestly, out of everybody, he keeps me interested in this company more than pretty much anybody else,
right?
To be honest with you. I really hope that he has a great match with him. I'd love to see him get some kind of title run or something, but I don't think the way they built it up, it just doesn't feel like it's his time, unfortunately, even though he had a really great tag league. I think they're better off probably winning the tag titles than him winning the Triple Crown.
And I think that it will happen.
Yeah, me too. That was a great match, too. Like, one of the best matches of the tournament was the finals, so you do have to give them props on that end. But really, on that show, the one you mentioned, the December 4 show, the main thing is that Konaka Pale One was on the undercard, I think. That was one of the few undercard matches I actually watched. I was like, oh, he's in All Japan again? Because he did show up earlier this year, too. A singles match with Kento that went like 5 minutes.
Yeah, he's still a Nagoya guy.
Yeah. So shout out to Nagoya's own Konaka Pale One on that one. And that was one of the last nights of the tournament, too. You know, there was only a couple of shows left. It kind of ended like, you know, that is something different from the New Japan Tag League, because you had the final night or whatever with the Tag League and the junior tournaments, and then you have this week-long wait or whatever for the last show, or 5 days or however long it is. And with All Japan's Tag League, it pretty much happened, I think, a day, like there was a one-day break. Yep. And then, it was like December 5 and then December 7 for the finals. So they got it pretty much out of the way, nice and tidy to end the year with this Tag League. And, I thought the finals was really good. You know, there was only 8 teams in the tournaments, so smaller than usual. But like I said, it was a ho-hum kind of tournament. I really liked the Next Dream team. The Purple Haze team did better than I thought they would, without Zeus there. And, you know, they didn't win a lot. They got one win, which I think might have been more than anybody has expected, even. but still, I thought they performed really well. I love seeing Irie in the tournament, and Izanagi. I like his gimmick that he brought to the table. And the Jin team All three of those impressed. And Infants, I think, were a solid fourth as well. I've always said Arashi is better as a tag man.
He is. And I think a lot of people are seeing that now, too. And he's come around. We've been over that, too. He's kind of now finding his place in All Japan. So that's good for him.
Yeah, totally. Like, yeah, good team, like good addition to the tournament. I think the ones that really, honestly, kind of dropped the ball were the outsider teams, because I really wasn't in. I've talked about my disdain for ECW, not even just this team, but all of ECW in general. I've come to the conclusion that I just hate ECW and anything involved with it is how I've come across. But also the Big Japan team, I thought was really dragging things down for a lot of their matches in All Japan.
I don't know. That team was just there for Kobayashi to have some fun. And I could enjoy the mild comedy they did with his fork. It was very inoffensive to me, I thought.
I like how you said that. I would like that to be isolated just with no context. He just had his fun with his fork.
I really liked the match that they had on the final day against the Violent Giants. I was into that.
Kobayashi did wear the crimson mask in that match.
They did shoot headbutts, him and Ishikawa.
Yeah, that's true. Ishikawa can work with these deathmatch guys when they bring him in. But yeah, I wasn't as enamored with big Kobayashi here. I get why he was in there. Obviously, you know, Abdullah the Butcher was a big star for All Japan. And now you have this other guy who's kind of like his incarnation or something.
Yeah,
I guess
he's Japanese
one
son,
of the ones most. Yeah, exactly. The one who's inspired most. And so it makes sense why he was there. Violent Giants looked pretty good in that match. They're a team I'm really up and down on in general, like both of those guys, as singles or tag. I'm kind of at a weird place with the Violent Giants, but maybe I'll give them a fresh start with our new information we have that Ishikawa's not the booker. Maybe I'll try and give them a fresh start in 2020-21.
I don't know about it. I'll still stand upon that. We've basically seen everything that they can accomplish as a tag team in All Japan, and it's time to move on for either guy,
even as singles. like I said, yeah. I'm at this point where it's like I don't know if I like them, and I kind of think I don't actually, and I would probably be trying to move on. Just like you said, like whether tag or singles, to be honest. But yeah, like that match was all right. I guess that was probably one of the better Big Japan matches. You know, it felt like maybe a tour off for Sekimoto as well, which, you know, he can always use those. He can always use tours off here. But, you know, but yeah, you know, okay tournament. Not too exciting, to
yeah.
be honest.
One more thing on the Big Japan team before we go on. At the beginning of the tour, I was really curious to see if Nikan Lee would ref any matches of theirs. And at first, she did not, which struck me as, of course, she wouldn't want to work with anyone that is from Big Japan because of her Big Japan past, and the way that she left. She obviously was married to Ryuji Ito, and that marriage fell apart, and she left Big Japan shortly thereafter, joined All Japan. And later in the tour, she reffed some matches of Kobayashi and Sekimoto, so I'm guessing that the relationship between those, at least, is pretty solid.
Oh, I'm sure she didn't mind refereeing their match. It's not like Ito was in them.
Yeah.
He might have been from the company more than anything that end. But it seemed like everything worked out for this tour. And that's good to see. You know, Nikan Lee is a great referee, yes, by the way. So anytime she can referee stuff is always a good thing. So congratulations to her for being on this tour and bouncing back on her feet, even though like her leaving Big Japan was pretty inauspicious. She's done a great job in All Japan, and I'm glad that they, you know, there's no like underlying heat to where Big Japan can ever work with her matches.
That's right. So let's go to the final, Dylan. What did you think about the? Well, you said it. It's a round robin tournament. It's not like the New Japan World Tag League. It's the real World Tag League. So we don't get a repetitive match because Kento Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi against Jake Lee and Koji Iwamoto happened to be the main event of Curricon Hall and also the deciding match of the Tag League. And it was won by Miyahara and Yuma Aoyagi, who ended up with 10 points, and everybody else underneath that, each team underneath that had 8 points. So the next team won in 28 minutes 34. What did you think?
Isn't it crazy how it always seems to magically work out?
Always works out.
That the last match on the tour somehow is the deciding match. They should do it one year where, like, the tournament has been decided by the final match. The main event just doesn't mean anything. It's like they're battling for fourth place in the tournament.
New Japan actually did that this year in the G1. Where they had the A-Block finals, and Jay White and Tomohiro Ishii, it didn't really mean anything anymore.
Jay was involved. If he had won, he would have made the finals.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, see, but I don't want anybody alive on the last night. I want it to be the battle of fourth and fifth place two teams in the last match. Like, oh, sorry, like, we never knew.
ECW against Ruji Sai and Yoshitatsu.
See, we hadn't even mentioned them, like, that team, the Sai and Yoshitatsu team, and with good reason. I would argue.
Yeah, they were there. They did their thing, and that's it.
You will not find a man less motivated than Ryoji Sai in all Japan.
You know what the greatest motivation that Ryoji Sai showed was after they won their match. He was showing off his muscles.
That might have been the highlight of the tour for him. Like, hey, check me out on there. But, you know, like, this guy, you know, this guy was once a very talented guy, like, at 0-1, like a worthy main eventer when, you know, back in the days before Land's End and all this craziness happened. You know, when him and Sato were good 0-1 representatives back then. But since he's come to All Japan, it's like, this guy doesn't give a crap about this company, it seems like. Every time he's in there, he's like the most mid-tier person that you could ever have. And in this tournament, he was the same way. Completely inoffensive, but, like, nothing special at all. Like, this could have been anybody in his position. Like, no motivation for Sai. So I don't know if I dislike it or admire it, that he's so unmotivated and works so, you know, not hard, that this is what we get from him. But I did want to bring that up before we get to the finals there. But yeah, the final match I thought was the best match of the tournament, actually. I love seeing Iwamoto get a lot of shine here. I think this whole tournament has been a good use of him, especially because, like I said, in even the other matches, he got some pinfalls, he got some big looks, he got a lot of spotlight, and in this match, he definitely did too, going head-to-head with Kento Miyahara, the ace of the company. So they did a great job. Whenever Jake was in, I was really impressed with his work. Like I said earlier, I always loved seeing him wrestle. And Aoyagi was arguably the MVP of the tournament. And I thought him winning the final fall was good. Unfortunately, it was to Lee. Like you said earlier, it would have been better if he had beaten Suwama, you know, the Triple Crown champion, but Lee took the fall here. The end game submission that he's been utilizing this year got the win here. And I mean, it went for a long time, but I thought it was a really good match between all, you know, all four men showed up and did a good job to make this at least cap things off. It wasn't the greatest tournament by any means, but at least got capped off on a good note.
Right. So I really thought that Yuma Aoyagi did a great job throughout the tournament, and he had a great partner in Kento Miyahara, who was able to give him his shining moments in this team. And it's funny that at the same time, Jake Lee kind of did the same for Koji Iwamoto. Even in their entrances, Jake Lee came out first, and he was basically standing at the aisle to introduce Koji Iwamoto, the reigning junior champion, and he took his moment to stand there while the heavyweight, who you would think is the biggest star than him, is standing there and waiting for him to go to the ring. So Koji Iwamoto, not only against the Violent Giants a couple of tour stops before, but also in this final match, he did get a lot of shine against Kento Miyahara, the guy, one of the greatest Triple Crown champions in recent years in All Japan. And there's the junior heavyweight champion in All Japan that is fighting against the former heavyweight champion, the big star. And I guess that, again, can be a positive influence from Tajiri, because he always is a kind of a guy for the cruiserweights, which they named it in Wrestle One when he was there.
Yeah, and I think that's great that they took the time to the care for Iwamoto to get this shine in this whole tournament. So I really appreciate that. The junior division throughout the year has been much improved, I would say, from, you know, last year.
Oh yeah.
But I really think a lot of that, really, if you look at it, it's kind of fool's gold, because a lot of the good stuff was from outsiders. You know, Susumu's title reign and Hikuto Hidaka challenging Iwamoto in by far his best match. The one big thing they've done is, like you said earlier, kind of push Atsuki more, like Aoyagi, mm-hmm. like really put him over a little bit more. But besides that, like the main positives have been from the outsiders, and I think that they need to still keep keep the pedal to the metal when it comes to the junior division of All Japan, and really go forward and push that even more in 2021, because they've got talented guys in there. Iwamoto's a very good talent in the ring, did great in the tournament, even against heavyweights. He's kind of in a weird position because they use him in a tag team with Lee, so he's kind of often going against heavyweights as much as juniors. But right now he gets his title reign with the junior championship, and is so far so good. Hopefully in 2021 that is one thing they keep up, and giving him good challengers, build the division around him a little bit, and have some, more standout matches, because I think they do need that in the junior division. Because, like I said, a lot of it really is the outsiders. I know a lot of people want to praise it, but that's really the main thing, I think, in 2021 is Susumu and then Hidaka coming in later on.
I'm really glad that Yuma Aoyagi used more of this spinning back kick that he acquired under the tutelage of Koki Kitahara. That was a big story going into his title match against Kento Miyahara earlier this year, and kind of got forgotten about. And what do you think about this end game submission? It's basically a front neck lock with an assisted hammer lock of sorts, where Yuma Aoyagi is applying pressure from the side to the neck region of the opponent.
I like the name, first of all. Shout out to the Avengers with this. I do enjoy that. But yeah, it's a pretty decent submission, I think. Like, for a finishing move, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, the name doesn't really fit his other signature move, the Rockstar Buster. He's over that phase of his career. He's not longer the Rockstar. He's the guy that uses the Endgame.
Yeah, that was his whole gimmick when he was like, before his turn at the start of the year, he was the rock star of all Japan. And then suddenly he has this Avengers move. He's the hero of all Japan, even though he turned heel. But now he's a babyface again. So he's somebody that has a unique character arc. We've seen that in comic books before, and Marvel movies and stuff like that, where a guy'll have a change of conscience. He's a hero, but he's also kind of a bad guy. But then deep down, he's always a good guy. That's Aoyagi in All Japan. He's like a tortured hero.
Right. And, the match, I saw some praise for it, and I'm not really sure if it was match of the year level, and I don't think it was. It was a good to great tag match, I would say. But to me, there was something missing. I didn't really love the first 10 minutes of the match. I thought that they basically were stalling for time in the first 10 minutes. And it only picked up at the end of the match, which I think a lot of people will point to. And it was a great finishing stretch. But for being a match of the year level candidate, it needs some more juice to it, I think.
No, I wouldn't call it a match of the year either. I agree with you on that one. But it was a very good match. But to me, the match of the year in All Japan was the six-man in April, and this wasn't as good as that.
Mm-hmm, right.
Or like Zeus and Kento.
Zeus too. And Kento, yeah.
That's another one. Like, those would be the two matches that stand out. I don't think this was as good as either of those. Even Ashino and Suwama, I think, I'd probably put ahead of this in All Japan. But, maybe like a match of the year candidate, maybe like a top 5 or 10 match in All Japan this year. Mm-hmm. Maybe for All Japan, but not overall. I wouldn't put this in my top 10, but it was a great match. It's taking nothing away from it. It's just not that top tier level.
So yeah, the rest of that tag league on that final show is not really any newsworthy.
Hey, let me ask you one more thing about that. What do you think of Jake taking the fall? Because he's had a very questionable like year and a half to 2 years of booking, and I think this continued that trend perhaps.
Well, All Japan finally protecting their junior champion, right?
And he's the one that gets sacrificed for it.
It's crazy, no? It's crazy to think about that, how Jake Lee always gets the short end of the stick in any situation. And dude, I don't know how much longer they can do this before everybody starts giving up on him.
You could say that we've already reached the end game of Jake Lee's main event push. Because I think they really, really did damage to him last year, like at the end and the start of this one, where he had the three straight Kento matches and lost a bunch of times in a row. I think that might have been the end of the line a little bit, or like they're teetering on the edge, but it's going to take a lot of work to really rehab him, because I don't really buy him as a champion-level contender at all. Even though I like his wrestling, I think the booking has really hurt him a lot. Even in that, you know, in the tournament this year, he wasn't even in the final.
No.
Yeah. Or was he in the final? Kento was in the final. Kento and Zeus was in the final. So he didn't even make the final, and everyone thought he would, remember? Yeah. They passed him over for Zeus for no reason.
Whatsoever. Zeus had his match and lost.
Yeah, and that was the end of that, pretty much. So, yeah, Jake, he's somebody that if they want to put him at that top tier level, they're going to have to rehab him. He's kind of like in a project state right now for 2021.
And I do think that would be the main objective of 2021, to position Yuma Aoyagi and Jake Lee in a main event role where you can believably think that these two could be Triple Crown champion.
I agree. If I were in charge of All Japan, if they had another whirlwind booker syndrome and they said, look,
somehow you end up with a book of All Japan.
Shoot, Big Dog calls me and says, Fox, I had enough of Tajiri. I've been listening to your show. I know what you're all about. Save us. That would be definitely my goal, would be to push Aoyagi and Jake more. Ashino, too, I think definitely. He's another guy that we thought had main event potential and I think has really fallen down the card, and maybe not been handled the best in 2020. So, like, all three of those guys, I would definitely be trying to have paying care, you know, I definitely try to pay careful attention to bring them up to that level. And it seems like they're off to a good start with Aoyagi. Jake's really on the back burner right now, but we'll see what happens. It's going to take some time to rehab him, I think, and hopefully they can get it together by the end of the year, next year.
Yeah, so the other tournament matches on this final, not really noteworthy. I called out the Violent Giants versus Team BJW match that I kind of liked. Then there was Hojisai and Yoshitatsu against Enfons, an 11-minute match that was okay. Team ECW against Purple Haze, short, 9 minutes, nothing to talk about here. But Dylan, looking back at our predictions for 2020, I don't think that any one of us had Naoya Ogawa doing an STO on Kenzo on the outside on an All Japan show where he did commentary for Amazon Prime.
What is that all about, this Amazon?
I don't know. And yeah, I've not checked out because I forgot to do it before the show, but I've no idea what this deal is about.
Okay, well, we'll just go with our gut on this one then. we have no facts, but all this signals to me is that the Dark Kingdom is coming back. So, Striga, this is what we needed in All Japan. I think that's what we all agreed. This was the missing ingredient, Dark Kingdom. Kenzo, the main eventer. I think those days of All Japan are long forgotten by many, and perhaps deservedly so. if you watch some of that. I remember watching that at the time. You know, when Kento came into All Japan, he was in Dark Kingdom.
Yep.
He was an underling of Kenzo.
Yeah, he was in the Budomurus before that too, in Diamond.
Even better. Striga. basically, Dark Kingdom was just a Voodoo Murders ripoff. Anyway. One of many in Japan these days. And so I think that's what we all said we needed more of. Cheating heel factions that have run-ins and bullcrap in all of their matches. It's what the people have wanted. Tajiri with his finger on the pulse, as always. This is exactly what All Japan needed. And Naoya Ogawa, I mean, he had big matches 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you want him? Invented the STO? What a great move. It's like, you know, he could do it. And that this should be his role on every show now. He should hit the STO on the outside on various random former All Japan people. Like, I think next time should be maybe they can bring in Taru, like Dragon Gate did. Yeah. Ogawa can hit the STO on him on the outside. You can bring back guys like, Hiroshi Yamato can come back in. Ogawa hits the STO on him. Next show, Ape Man runs in, and Ogawa just knocks him out with the STO. And what a huge moment. Like, can you imagine the crowd pop? That would break all the rules of the pandemic rules. The crowd would just stand up to their feet when they see Ape-Man waddle his way down. Do you agree?
I absolutely agree. They should do that. Maybe they can bring in Yutaka Yoshi, too. He was in All Japan, too.
Sure.
Have him be STO'd.
Somebody's got to take these STOs. They've got a whole Rolodex of random people from the past. Kono, we haven't seen him do anything lately. I think this could be his return moment.
Right? Raj? Kono, yeah. He had to form his own company.
Yes, that's right. Now they can do a working together agreement, much like Land's End. And Kono can be the one that's unmotivated in these shows, along with Sai.
So I'm right now at the Japanese page of Amazon, and there is actually a page for All Japan. So I guess they will be doing more, because it says here you can rent or purchase episode 1. And episode 1 is apparently, I guess it is a digest of the Real World Tag League Finals, because it is 90 minutes long.
Yeah.
And it appears that there will be more episodes of that.
That's interesting that they have that deal.
So it seems to me they just shopped some of their All Japan TV content to Amazon.
Like I said, that's fine. Like, you know, I think that's kind of an interesting deal to have an Amazon presence for a wrestling company in Japan. Mm-hmm. That can only be a good thing. I can't imagine this doing like big business or anything, but still, I think it's a good little sign there, like good little deal for them to have.
There's one review of that first episode here on Amazon. It says it's 4 stars, 4 out of 5.
Okay.
I thought it was a regular series broadcast, but it was interesting because there were some wrestlers who didn't usually go up to All Japan. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens to Mr. Ogawa in the future.
I mean, he's the big star of this
All Japan show. Left a great impression. This user wants to know more about Naoya Ogawa.
Yeah, like, yeah, I know we had some wrestlers, this Kento guy, I don't really know him, but Ogawa, like that's who we need to really see more of. The show. Do you think he could do some kind of match for All Japan?
I think if he wanted to, he could do like a tag, a 6-man tag.
I mean, why? What would it hurt, really? Like, if he came in, like, just to do a random match? I mean, we've got. I think that's kind of a popular thing in Japan these days, having these old guys be in main events. Like, I don't
it's
know
only 52 years old.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, these stars of the past, even though his star was like a total whirlwind. Booking when he was in wrestling, but
Hulk Hogan, baby.
Oh,
that
God.
Used to be a thing. But Dylan, on to more puzzling things in All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Let's go.
After questioning what they were doing with Yusuke Okada ever since he split from Evolution, now we got the news that at the end of the year, after December 31st, his contract with All Japan Pro Wrestling is up, and he will become a freelancer. And one day after that, we see him having dinner with Jun Akiyama. What the fuck did they do wrong with this guy? Or how the fuck?
So much.
How the fuck did they fuck up this guy? Dude, this guy, and you've been much higher than I have been for a long time, but ever since he kind of, became the partner of Hikaru Sato and he took over the colors of Tsuchi Aoki. I remember going up to Chris Hero when he was in WXW 2 years ago, or what was it? No, it was in late 2019. Seems like a lifetime ago. I told him, watch this match. Watch this match from the Aoki Memorial Show. Watch this guy like carry over Aoki's colors and wrestle. This guy should be the future of the junior division, All Japan. And he had all the potential in the world, and they pissed it all away.
I mean, just like you said, I've really loved this guy. Like, literally since his debut, I thought, was when he had this injury earlier on in his career, and when he came back with the blue and all of that. When he came back, I said, this guy has got something. Like, they have something in Okada. they should try and really protect him and nurture him into a, because I really think he could have been a main event level player if they had played their cards right. Obviously, that didn't happen, but that was a, like, that match you mentioned with Sato was just a wonderful match, I thought. And, like, what a great tribute to Aoki, emotional. Like, I would highly recommend, if nobody's seen that match or somebody's listening and they haven't seen that match, go back and watch that from 2019, Sato and Okada, because they had a great, great match. And I remember at the end of the year, at the time, I was like, okay, I really like this match, and it was a great match and all, but I didn't really think about it as match of the year quality or whatever. But then by the end of the year, I kept going back when I was making my top 10. It's like, that match kept popping up. It was like, well, what about this match? Like, you know, and it's just, I really, really loved it at the end of the year. I think that ended up making my top 10 at the end of the year. So I really loved that match. Great, great talent in the ring. He's got charisma, great look. You know, if you just see him in pictures, he looks like a star. He knows how to carry himself. I think he's got everything you would want. And if you look back at the Dojo documentary they have on All Japan,
yeah,
he was like one of the star guys of right. that. And right. he comes across, and I've said this before, he comes across to me, like even before that, I kind of felt this watching him. Because there's certain guys you can see, and especially me, I think if you're in the ring, you can, or you have been in the ring in the past, you can see this sort of thing. He seems like the kind of guy that just gets pro wrestling. And when you look at the documentary, it definitely came across like that was true. He just feels like he has everything you would want, and it just doesn't make any sense why they've handled things this way. Like, he, one of the more criminally underrated guys when it comes to booking, not necessarily fan reaction, because I think a lot of people have grown to really like him as well. You know, I might have been a little early, but I think everybody kind of came around and saw that this guy had a ton of potential. But in terms of booking, It's really a shame. Like, they totally squandered a potential star and him. And to be honest with you, I'm glad he's leaving. Like, I know this was supposed to be, like, you know.
And Hikaru Sato on his Twitter, he went up to say that he tried to talk Okada into staying with the company, but his mind was already made up. And good for him, because when you look at his final 6 months in All Japan, you could clearly see that they were not planning on doing anything with the guy. He was taking falls left and right. Even in a match where they had Chikara Momota in, it was Yusuke Kato who took the fall on the final day of the Real World Tag League. And I stand by this point. I believe that he did something that pissed off someone in a major position. And it probably has to do with this, with how the split went with Evolution. I just gotta think that something happened within Evolution, within the confounds of that group, because there are Ishikawa and Zuwama, the big guys. They have a lot of influence behind the scenes. I gotta think that something happened, something that he did wrong, or they think he did wrong, because there is no other explanation.
It's hard to say, like, you know, because I think that's logical. In wrestling, there are so many stupid ways you could get heat. You know, he might not have even done anything wrong.
Right.
You know, but somebody might have taken something the wrong way. Or maybe he did do something wrong. Like we don't know. Yeah. The only thing I will say against that is that, yes, like, the last while, he's been taking more falls, you know, in this last little while. But even historically, they've never really taken any kind of advantage of his role. He's never really gotten any kind of push. Even last year, I mean, he had that match with Sato, but that was really because of Aoki. It really wasn't because they were pushing him. You know, it was because of the situation. Even remember when they had that tournament, you know, last year, for when they had Susumu ended up winning it? He was out in the first round.
Right.
Like, Okada. So he had never really gotten any kind of push. Everyone says, oh, yeah, he really tanked. But he was never that pushed in the company, and I think he should have been. He's somebody, like, dating back that 2 years ago they should have been looking at more. But I don't think he ever got anything solid anyway, you know, when it came to that. The most they did with him was really that Tachibana, like, goofy angle in July. And they had the feud with Yoshitatsu. He won the hair versus hair match with Sego, and then lost immediately to Yoshitatsu, like, a week later.
That was this weird state of All Japan where they all of a sudden did a hair versus hair match out of nowhere. It was in May, I think.
It's July.
July. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It made no sense. basically, the funny thing is that whole feud was supposed to be with Tatsu, but somehow Tachibana's hair was on the line for that. But yeah, like, so that was probably his biggest push in July. And, like, you know, historically in the company, he never got his due. So I don't know if they just never saw it with him. Clearly, Sato saw something in him because he wanted him to stay. But like you said, maybe the big dog and Suwama and these guys, something happened, or maybe they just didn't like him for whatever reason, or didn't like his work. I don't know why. Like, you would think that if you watch him wrestle, but there's so many things. You know, maybe he stiffed somebody backstage. You know, he didn't shake his hand or some bullcrap like that. You just never know. Wrestling is just so stupid at times, especially when it comes to backstage politics, that it could have been literally anything that led to that and why he never got his push as much. But I would say his entire All Japan career is like they dropped the ball, not really just the last year.
Did they ever pick up the ball is the better question, I guess.
Yeah, that would be more accurate. It's like he didn't really go down more than he ever has. It's just he's always been at that level, unfortunately.
Yeah, but it was really very clear that in recent months he was just there to take the falls.
Yeah, it's clear he's going nowhere. Like we know that.
Yeah, so I guess he's going into the new direction, and everything points to him being a freelancer, or maybe even going to the same route that Junakiyama goes to. And I also had a conversation with the user Shut Up Patrick that I mentioned before about Okada, of course, and he also thought that his detriment may be his loyalty to Junakiyama, because Junakiyama has left the company too. Officially, he's on loan to DDT, but we, of course, know what that means. So maybe his loyalty to Akiyama cost him his position in All Japan.
Maybe. Like, you know, that would be one thing that I could totally buy, like, happening. That's the kind of stupid thing that would get somebody
yeah,
heat
exactly.
in wrestling. But it really shouldn't matter. But, you know, you could buy that, though. That's a very reasonable assumption.
What do you think about him in DDT?
I don't know. Like, he doesn't come across like a comedy guy to me, to be honest. But
have you seen his last couple of months? He's been doing nothing but comedy.
Well, his booking is comical more than him per se. But I mean, Akiyama, he's pretty much straight up in DDT. So if he wanted to join his faction or whatever, you know, that would be fine. He can have some great matches with people like, you know, Takeshita and stuff like that. You know, Endo, I'm sure he could do some good things. He's more of he would have a good advantage there because he's a little small and undersized, but in DDT, he would be a good fit for that. Like a DDT or a Dragon Gate kind of promotion, he could be that guy. Like if they wanted to get behind him, their size wouldn't be an issue for him. So I do think that would be a decent spot for him. But to me, everybody should call him. Like yes. Every promotion. Like even New Japan. If you were going to take a swing on somebody, and you know that they very rarely go after guys, but we've seen it in the past with people like Sonata. He is a guy that there's upside to if they wanted to go after. He could bulk up. Like he could get 20 pounds if you need that. That's all he needs. Like, so if you want to push him and you have plans for him and you see that in him, he is the type of guy that could be a home run swing, you know, for you if you wanted to be like that. And Noah, I think, should totally go after him. He'd be a great addition to their roster. Any promotion that has funds and means to sign this guy should be knocking on his door. Like, as soon as that got announced, his phone should have been ringing, in my opinion. But I think definitely the signs point to him jumping to DDT with Akiyama.
I was thinking Dragon Gate should call him and pair him with Keisuke Okuda.
That would be an amazing tag team if they did that. You know, a great... The Dragon Gate would be potentially one of the best places he could go because, again, the size wouldn't hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a great worker. He had a ton of fresh matches. Maybe he talked to somebody like a Susumu when he was in All Japan. Now, I kind of speculated that on Twitter, that, you know, maybe when all that was going around, maybe he caught somebody's eye when Kagetora was around and stuff like that. You know, they could put in a good word for him and he could have some matches there. There's no rule that says he can't wrestle in, you know, as a freelancer, you know, in other companies. But I would love to see him in a Dragon Gate position because I think he could really go places there. And his style, I think, fits better there than DDT personally.
Yeah, DDT, you know, they have so many different styles right now that it's really hard to disqualify anyone for not being a DDT-style wrestler. But the same goes for Dragon Gate. They've opened up so much, so we'll see about that. But I agree with you. Yusuke Okada should definitely be someone that everybody should be looking out to book for their shows, for their promotion. But I guess so much for All Japan now.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
DDT, we've been talking about them here. They have their tournament going on right now too, the D-King Grand Prix 2020. Dylan, you've been watching this tournament too. Which matches did you particularly like?
Yep, I've been watching the tournament. I've been covering it for patreon.com/EasternLariat, the wonderful Patreon that we have there. You know, I've watched everything except for the last show, so I think that's like the first three or four shows overall, pretty much. On the first night, you know, it was an all right show, I thought. I thought that, you know, the main event was so horrendously boring that it unfortunately, and with two guys that I really like too, that was the sad part. That was like the most heartbreaking match of the year for me, because they're two of my favorite wrestlers in DDT. You know, like it's true that they have a lot of styles, but those two are like two of the better pure wrestlers, and they did this just terrible 30-minute match, like the worst stalling ever. There was a spot literally where Akito was on the outside, and he was like literally just standing there for like the entire 20 count almost. Just total nonsense of a match, and I was not happy with how that played out.
Yeah, and you know, I was kind of sitting here, and sometimes that happens to me where I think there are two great guys in the match, and I sit there and watch the match, and I always think, am I missing something, or why is this just not hitting with me? And thank you for that, but I completely agree with you. That match could have been much, much, much better. But actually, that was not the actual first show.
That was number two. I realized that as I was talking. I don't that match just stood out the most to me because it was the most disappointing. The first show, let me pick up with that one again. I really liked the Ueno and Higuchi match the first show. That was my favorite match of the first show. The main event was pretty good, I thought, but that match stood out to me more, I think, the Ueno and Higuchi match.
Yeah, me too. I agree with you. I kind of like the Daisuke Sasaki and Konosuke Takeshita match too. That's rare that I really put over a Daisuke Sasaki match, but that was cool, and unfortunate that Daisuke Sasaki had to drop out of the tournament due to a rib injury.
I agree with you. That was one of the better Sasaki matches, actually. I said that. I loved when Takeshita did the clover leaf into the swing.
Yeah.
That was pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, sometimes Daisuke Sasaki is there for those moments that are really uncommon, that you would not really, moments that you would really not see in any other wrestlers' matches. So, yeah, that was in Kurikan Hall. The show that you mentioned was on November 27, and then it went on in the same arena on November 28 with a great, great main event, I thought. It was a double KO between Tetsuya Endo and Katsusada Higuchi. What did you think about that?
Oh, yeah, that was a really good match, too. That was one of the better ones. And Endo, you know, Higuchi we always put over, but I thought Endo did a really good job in that match, working with Higuchi there. So I thought that was a great match. I totally agree with you. And what show was that on again?
It was November 28.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was a great match. Yeah, that was probably, like, you know, arguably the best one of the tournament so far. Yeah. I think it was, yeah. Like, that, what we've seen so far, the tournament's not over yet. We still got, 10 days to go, I think, in the tournament. At this point, something like that, you know, 10 days and 2 weeks. So
let
you got...
How much we still have left to go, actually.
Yeah, I think it's December 22nd.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a great match, though. The Higuchi and Endo match. And I love the finish, too, because it protects both guys. I love the way they've handled Higuchi this year. I think they've totally put him over in a good way. Even though we were kind of disappointed he didn't get the win in the other tournament they had, the King of DDT tournament. But still, they've done a great job with him. And again, his push continues, and his great work continues here. I thought this was one of the better Endo matches of the year, personally.
Yeah, so even though the finals is on December 27, there is only one more block show coming ahead on December 12th. The standings right now at this point, they show that Harashima is leading Block A with 7 points over Yukio Sakaguchi with 6, Chris Brooks and Konosuke Takeshita also with 6. And in Block B, we have Endo and Higuchi at 7 and Akiyama and Soma Takao at 6.
And Ueno at 6 too.
Oh yeah, and Ueno at 6 too. And the final block show has Takeshita versus Harashima, Sakaguchi against Akito, Mao against Chris Brooks, Endo against Makoto Ishii, Soma Takao against Shuma Katsumata, and Yuki Ueno against Jun Akiyama. So probably Ueno and Akiyama in Block B and Takeshita and Harashima in Block A.
I do like how they ended up playing this out because everyone's still alive in the tournament, pretty much on the last night, except for Shuma. Yeah. Everyone else is still alive.
Right. That was the November 28 one, the November 29 one. They went to Osaka for that one. Looking at the show, I thought that was a decent one, but nothing that struck me as great.
Nah, probably the one that I kind of liked was Akiyama and Oishi. I thought that was a good match. Ueno and Endo had a decent match, a little long, I think, kind of took away from it. But
that's some of the things that one thing that I really don't like about Yuki Ueno right now. He's it seems like they want him to go into a direction where he is approaching Konosuke Takeshita levels, in the sense that he's going for more epic matches.
Yeah,
long
he's
matches
like,
and matches with a lot of near falls and stuff and high flying stuff, and it's more of an epic approach to a match.
Yeah, he's kind of like the new work rate guy, like right. they're putting in here, and he's a great wrestler, so I really enjoy his work for the most time. Just not in this situation. I didn't think it was a great match. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody really stood out on that show. To be honest with you, it was okay. Like the Akiyama and Oishi match was probably my favorite.
Yeah, right. So that then brought us to the show that you have not watched yet. And I do think that you will enjoy the Akito versus Harashima double pin match a lot. I did enjoy that. One match that I wanted to shout out. When did that actually happen? I have to look at Katsuna Higuchi's profile. He faced Shunma Katsumata. And that was his one loss in the tournament, and it was on December 4. And I thought that match was very funny, because this is the one way that you can beat a giant monster like Katsuhara Higuchi in a tournament like this, is when you play the comedy card. And they did with Shunma Katsumata. It was more of a match where he tried to throw all of his stuff at Katsuhara Higuchi that he has in his upper sleeve from his deathmatch and hardcore experience, and Katsuhara Higuchi was handicapped by that, and then to a great reaction from the fans, lost the match.
Yeah, like I said, Shunma is a really interesting guy. He's pretty up and down. I really didn't like his first match against Endo at all, to be honest with you. But he's a good worker, very talented, and one of the guys I put over on the Patreon. He's a guy that's very versatile. I feel like in the not just in DDT, but in the Japanese wrestling scene, you see him work all these different styles, and you know, you never know what you're going to get with him. And the DDT is a really great place for him because he can do pretty much all of that stuff. You know, at the end of the day, I think he mostly plays into the DDT, you know, shtick, I guess, of being a comedic guy.
Yeah.
But he can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, Akito versus Harashima from December 6th.
Oh, I just want to jump back on the fourth show, because a match I really liked on that show, I wanted to point out. Sakaguchi versus Harashima.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah, it was a great technical match like they had there. Harashima is completely versatile as well in this tournament, because he can work with pretty much everybody. And here we got to see a completely different style for him, where he got to do a technical match with Yukio Sakaguchi. And I think they did a really good job. I highly enjoyed that. You know, that's a match I would recommend. That was one of my favorite matches of the tournament, so would recommend that.
One of my favorite matches of the tournament actually was the main event of the December 6th show. Katsuhara Higuchi defeated Jun Akiyama in 4 minutes and 3 seconds. And it was a match where both guys just threw everything they have at one another, and they just went balls to the wall, and Katsusada Higuchi ended up defeating Jun Akiyama, and he used the this claw hold that he has now to basically hold Akiyama down to the ground and kind of roll him up at the same point. To me, one of the best sub 5 minute matches of the year.
Yeah, I'm interested in that. That's a unique finish, especially to a main event match to go that fast. I really appreciate them doing something different. On paper, the Akito and Hiroshima match you mentioned was probably the one that I'm looking forward to most. What do you think of this claw Higuchi had? Because they had a weird spot in his match with Oishi, where Oishi did this whole match with focusing on the leg, and he got him into the leg lock. And then Higuchi's counter to this was just to put on the claw to Oishi while he was still in the leg lock. It's like you had the dueling claw and leg lock at the same time, and the claw won somehow. I thought that was kind of a silly finish, actually.
Yes and no. I always liked the claw. I loved it when Lance Archer was bringing it to New Japan and used it. I always love when a big guy like Archer or Higuchi is going for that, because the hands he has, they are just so huge, and especially in an environment in DDT where there are a lot of smaller guys, and along with that, a lot of smaller heads. You can really like grab the entire head with one hand if you're Higuchi. And I also like the approach that they took with him, that the shoulder block, the running shoulder block, the Butchi Kamashi, is now one of his finishing moves, because he just runs the smaller guys over with it. So I think that fits the character very well, and along with that goes the claw hold.
Oh yeah, I like the claw hold as a move, and I definitely like the running shoulder block. They put that over in the other tournament too as mm-hmm. one of his biggest moves. I like the claw hold, just not how they did it in that match.
Yeah, I can see, I can see that. But then again, yeah. It's a smaller guy like Oishi, and him holding down a giant like Higuchi. Well, you could tell the story that, of course, Oishi is a versatile technical wrestler, so he can hold him down, but Higuchi breaking free with his power also is a very believable story to me.
But he actually didn't break free. That's my problem with it. If he had broke the hold with the claw, that would have been okay. But actually how they did it was he held on to the leg while he was in the middle of the claw after he'd spent the whole match working the leg. Like, if he had flopped off and been like, no, the claw! Like, I would have been fine with that. It's just how they did it was so goofy. I thought that was one of the sillier spots in the tournament. But the claw hold in and of itself is a good move. Right. So I totally agree with you. And the shoulder block's awesome. Higuchi's just a really good performer, I would say, in the tournament.
He's finally cashing in to all of his abilities that I've seen since his debut, and he's really coming into his own and getting more and more. I think he's gotten more aware of what he is and what he can bring to the table, and aware of his stature, and that he really needs to be this giant in DDT. I think for a long time he tried to fit into what DDT has to offer, but now he's kind of offering his stature and his height to DDT to be something completely different that they don't really have, except for him.
Absolutely. And DDT, one thing you got to say about him is they've done a great job putting over these young guys like him, Naomi, and Yuki Ueno. They've gotten all three of those guys, elevated them all three throughout the year. And a lot of, Ueno and Higuchi especially were really big standouts at DNA when they were... That was still a thing. Mm-hmm. So to see them finally get their run up the card, I really appreciate as well. So I love Higuchi, and I think they've done a great job with him. And in general, I think that's one of the better things about DDT is that they have taken care of their younger guys and been able to elevate some new guys.
They really have. So DDT is always a company that you should check out, especially because the DDT... Oh, the Wrestle Universe service has so much to offer. Except for DDT, they of course have Tokyo Yoshi Pro, and Dylan, they also have Pro Wrestling Noah. And that will be our final topic for today.
How dare you disrespect Ganbare Pro by not mentioning them?
Dude, I love Ganbare Pro, but I wanted to find a segue to Noah.
You could have just said Ganbare Pro first.
Yeah, right, I'm sorry. No disrespect to Ken Oka and Shota here.
We respect Ken Oka on this show.
We do. We do. And yeah, I very much respect the Independent Junior Heavyweight Championship. So that's in Ganbare Pro too. But still though, Pro Wrestling Noah, they just 2 weeks after their Yokohama show, they put on a show in the Yoyogi National Stadium number 2 in Tokyo with Goshi Ozaki defending the GHC Heavyweight Championship against Takashi Sugiura in a 51-minute match. And looking at that card, Dylan, the rating that it has right now on Cage Match, in my opinion, is more fitting than the rating that I saw for it on the day, past Sunday, when it actually happened, because the rating was much higher for the show. I do very much think that this was a one-match show. What about you?
I agree with you, to be honest with you. I think the best match was clearly the main event. However, for a one-match show... This is probably about as good as it's going to get.
Yeah,
I would argue. I will say, like, you know, some of the matches were, you know, okay. It wasn't a terrible show or anything like that. I just think things didn't, like, business didn't really pick up until the final show. And I think that there was really one other match you would have wanted to like, and I don't think it really worked as much as I would have liked.
Yeah, I guess you're talking about the Kenno and Kazushi Sakuraba match?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was disappointed with that one. I really thought that that would be much better given how much Kazushi Sakuraba has fit into Pro Wrestling Noah now, but kind of dysfunctional in my opinion.
Yeah, it didn't work, unfortunately. And we've seen him have great matches before, but just these two together, the chemistry just wasn't there, to be honest with you. And I do think that sometimes Kenno has done an admirable job these last couple of months. You know, especially since the tournament happened, he won the national title. Like, I really liked his match versus Kaito 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But I do think they have this tendency at times to put him in these positions that maybe don't play to his strengths too much. And I think this might have been one of those situations. Doing a shootish style of match against Sakuraba, you know, like, I get that they gave him the sleeper hold as a new finish, but that doesn't make you a shoot stylist suddenly just because you have a new finisher that's a submission. And I think maybe they kind of overestimated that. But yeah, I don't think this worked nearly as much as. And I was excited about that match too because I've really loved Sakuraba and Noah. I think he's been a great addition, but unfortunately that match didn't come together. I think its rating on Cage Match is pretty accurate.
Yeah,
you know, like
5.8.
Yeah. That's about where I would rate it too. Like two and three quarters to 3 stars. And you have higher expectations for that as well. But can we please talk about the junior division?
Yes!
Before we get to the main event.
Our final talking point. It's an Eastern Lariat special to bury the Noah junior division. And they just gave us another reason to. So please just elaborate.
Yes. We had a legendary match. First of all, but even before that, they had the Momono Station tag in a random, you know, second match on the show after they got together and had the titles and all that. But no, they're back with Miyawaki, of course, beating Kongo. who doesn't beat Kongo these days?
You know. Dylan, Momono Station tag, they now had their run, and now it's their turn to return to the second match of the show, defeating Kongo.
Yeah, they had their. I mean, and what a run it was, Striga. After all those years of being apart, they finally came back together. And, I mean, they had a
glamorous 2-week run, yeah.
Yes, it was an amazing 2 weeks that we had. And now they're back feuding with Kongo and beating them in the undercard. But, yeah, so the main thing, though, the junior tag team match, the match and the titles that Momono Station Tag lost 2 weeks ago, now they have a new storyline. And so we have, obviously, 2 weeks ago, we had this new guy come in, Salvaje de Oriente. Who, shout out to Nappon,
yep,
the wrestling genius on Twitter right now, who was able to determine this man's identity. He now has a successful cage match profile because it turns out that it was, in fact, Yuya Susumu, formerly known as Dragon Joker, a Freedom's talent, and now he's in Noah. And how do we know this? Because he turned on Kotaro Suzuki 2 weeks after he came in. Of course he did. And now he is in Stinger, the new representative. But wait, there's more, Striga. That's not all. Because our guy, Nosawa, came out, and he came out with a new masked man, Striga.
Yeah.
Who we still don't know the identity of. Has Nappon investigated the identity of this guy?
No. No, let's see. The user Super Yasmas has invested.
Okay.
And he has found out that the hands of this mystery guy that is coming, that came along with the Nosawa Rangai, he has remarkably similar hands to a guy that we only saw a photo of his hands to in August, and it turned out to be Ikuto Hidaka in All Japan Pro Wrestling. And I think it's Ikuto Hidaka.
Well, he would be a great addition if it is him. I will give him that. What a way to debut him, though, in a mask, like for this.
Well, I did the same for the U.S. Susumu.
Yeah, like well, I think Hidaka would have a little bit more, name value. To be honest with you, you wouldn't want to debut him as this random guy. Susumu, it's like, okay, he's a Freedom's guy, but it's not the end of the world if you put him in this new gimmick. But Hidaka, he's known.
Of course, this Nosawa deal couldn't come without him faking an allegiance to Stinger.
Only
to turn on them 2 seconds later.
Yeah, okay, so there were three turns in this match at the end of it. We had the one turn with Susumu, then you had the fake turn with Nosawa, and then Suzuki left with Nosawa and Masked Guy. So we've got three different turns in one match. What? And this has to be like a joke to him at this point. Like,
right.
He is now booking the division as
can't
his
be serious anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Like this, he has gotten that his reputation is that there are so many turns in this division. So now he's going all out with it, pretty much.
Yeah. And man, what a stupid thing. The stupidest thing in wrestling, in my opinion, is when there's a turn of a tag partner, but the tag partner wrestles the entire match as if he was still teaming with his partner
and not turning
on him at the end of the match. So this was a 17-minute match where Salvaje de Oriente, for the entire time, acted as if he was still wrestling, teaming with Kotaro Suzuki, and then he turned at the end of the match to give Stinger the victory.
Yeah, what if Kotaro
Why did I watch
won?
A 17-minute match?
Yeah, what if Suzuki had won like in 13 minutes? Then what?
Yeah, then what? Exactly.
Yeah, and why this was never explained. Why did he even come in with Kotaro in the first place? If he knew he was Susumu,
explanation is that now Yoshinari Ogawa said that he can't take anything away from Kotaro Suzuki, so he proved it in taking away his new tag team partner.
But why did Kotaro even want to team with him in the first place? They have no allegiance to each other before this 2-week run.
Guess to show the struggle of Kotaro Suzuki even finding someone to tag with.
Yeah, but why did he recruit him? Like, why did Kotaro want to team with this guy, Salvaje Doriente, in the first place?
Well, what I just said, that he just doesn't have anyone else.
So well, how did he even find him? there's been no part of his storyline where he's a deathmatch wrestler, to my knowledge. He would be in Freedoms. So why did he recruit this Salvaje de Oriente? Did one day a guy just show up to him in a mask and be like, hey, want a tag?
Right.
I don't have anybody else, so why not?
Are you really, like you just said that the booking of a junior division is just a joke to Nosawa now, and now you're trying to make sense of it?
Well, far be it from me, Stringer, to try and be logical about any of this, but I can't wait for the Samurai TV breakdown of this, this junior.
Oh yeah, we need a new flip chart.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean,
just for this one match.
Yeah, just for this one match, you need a whole new match. Like, to me, compared to where they are now, May was way more coherent than what they've done now in the last month or so. Like, literally the last month. This is like Russo booking, like on crack. Like Russo booking on crack is Nosawa in the junior division.
Yeah.
Nosawa, are you a crackhead? Tell me. Expose yourself.
Maybe we ask Sugi about that.
Yeah, that was a whole other situation. Or was he framed? Maybe Sugi's the one booking the show, and he's framing Nosawa for it. Now, just like we saw Ishikawa, everybody blamed him for all this. Maybe someone else is secretly booking Tajiri is booking the junior division in Noah. That's what I think that we've discovered now. I'm expecting that somebody needs to work with Noah and get confirmation, because I believe that Tajiri is the booker of the juniors, not the heavyweights. But because it's funny, they don't do this with the heavyweights for some reason. But in the junior division, this is what we've got now. So that's my conspiracy theory. I missed the boat on Tajiri being the booker of All Japan, and I'm not going to miss it this time, Striga. He is booking the juniors, and that I'm sticking to that story.
So I do think that Yuya Susumu is still wrestling with Freedoms, and he's just doing both companies now. Good for him. Freedoms is not running as often as Pro Wrestling Noah, so he's getting more opportunities now to wrestle and to make money. Good for the guy.
That's a good break for him to have the Noah spot. He's going to get a chance to, you know, shine a little bit, even though the storyline is completely nonsensical.
We'll see about that. We've thought the same thing about Seki Yoshioka when he came into Pro Wrestling Noah, but look at what he's doing now.
To Noah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And what do you think about Hajime Ohara now being the new leader of Full Throttle? They once again did this weird Full Throttle leader decision three-way match.
Well, like I said, Yoshioka, he's not getting pushed in Noah, but he's still better off than he was in Wrestle 1. So, like I said, you know, like it's much better to be here than even a quote-unquote star in Wrestle 1. Like, to me, he's not even... The funny thing is that these guys that he's with, Yohei and Ohara, have been in Noah forever, especially Ohara, and they don't get pushed either. So what a great group this is. You know, Yohei has been the most pushed member of this group. But yes, Ohara is now the new leader, because Kotage left. When they originally did this a few months ago, Kotage had won the leadership role, and then he left. So they had to find a new one. And now Ohara fills that role, and he's the best worker of the team, to be honest with you. But yeah, I mean, I liked their match though against Kongo. And yeah, now, to be fair, they lost to the heavyweights Kongo. It wasn't that like they lost to Hau, unfortunately. But I liked their match with Nakajima, Soya, and Kitamiya. That was a very enjoyable 9 minutes, you know. So they have a valuable role as like this underdog group in Noah, I feel like, because they don't really get pushed. Like, they're kind of like the forgotten guys of the division at this point. But I think they have a good little role there with Ohara and Yoshioka. Yohei, I'm not a fan of at all. I think we all know that by now. But still, I think they have a good role at least in the undercard. And if you're not doing anything with the titles, you know, at least they have something. I think Momo Tag is in worse shape than Full Throttle at this point. As crazy as that is.
Yeah. You know, I'm turning away from the junior division for now. Hope that whenever the Kongo split happens, this trio that we just mentioned, Nakajima, Soya, and Kitamiya, they stick together. Because, as you said, this match was great for a 9-minute six-man tag.
Yeah, especially like a random undercard match, like third match on the show. Like, this is really good stuff. You know, Ohara is just a fantastic worker, in my opinion. He's like the Okada of this company, like somebody who should be doing way more for years, but he never seems to get that break that he deserves, I feel like. But yeah, they're a really good trio, the Kongo guys, Nakajima, Soya, Kitamiya. And you can have what you said last month where you talked about the aggression reforming. They could do that and have some great matches too, and have this like have Soya as kind of like their third guy when they do these other matches. So, good stuff there, and yeah, I really like him.
Yeah, the Okada of this company, Kenya Okada.
He's the true Okada of this company.
Yeah, he was in the opening match once again against Yasutaka Yano, fairly new guy, but once again, for his level of experience, Yasutaka Yano, really good showing. Kenya Okada guiding him through the match. 7 minutes, a good opening match.
I like that too. That was one of my one of my more favorite matches on the show, besides the main event. I really enjoyed watching these young guys go at it. Yano looks good so far. He's still super early, so it's, you know, you can't make any judgments, but He looks good so far, and Okada is somebody who has a lot of upside, and I always enjoy when I get to watch him wrestle.
The M's Alliance, Dylan. They once again appeared, bringing along Yuko Miyamoto, who was there to take the pinfall, which was kind of surprising, since he lost to Inamura, Yoshiki Inamura, in a, I thought, very cool fashion, because I really liked the Muso. Was the finishing move that Takeshi Rikyo used when he was still around. It is kind of an elevated, it's not a choke slam. What would you call it?
It's kind of like a one-handed, one-armed spine buster.
Yeah,
like like a Uranagi, but from the waist almost. Like a lifted Uranagi, but from the waist. So it looks really cool.
It really looks cool, especially when you do it to a guy that is very flexible and that you can throw around like Yuko Miyamoto. It's not really a big dude. So good shine on Yoshiki Inamura here. But then again, on the last show, he was teaming with the young guys in the opening match, losing. And now here is in the semi-main, winning against an established guy, kind of flip-flopping around after leaving Congo, shaving off his hair, going to the opener, now in the semi-main. Not sure where they are going with this now.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's just it was great to see Inamura get that win, because to me he's been ready for a while now, you know. But obviously they always go with the young guys kind of going under for a long time, traditionally. But now he gets this big win over Miyamoto, and I guess this is kind of like his elevation from young guy status, young tiger status, I guess in Noah, you could say. And he got this big win in this match, and I think that's a great little storyline to have, and a nice development on a show that was, like I said, the other match didn't really deliver that we wanted, the national title match. So at this point, this was my favorite match on the show, but like, obviously before the main event. You had Inamura do the Muso, like you said, great move, shades of Rikyo, as you mentioned. He does, and Inamura did it great too, like lifting him up, slamming him down, it was perfect. And yeah, I enjoyed that part of it. The other guys did all right. Kaito was in here. Inaba got there. I always see Inaba when he goes to Noah.
Yeah,
his rare appearances.
Once again, got booked.
And that's nice. I like when he gets booked.
Yeah, it doesn't happen so often.
I know. I wish he'd get booked more on here. But yeah, so I enjoyed that. He got the win here. He was on the winning team. This is a good little faction they have here with these four guys. Inaba, Kaito, Taniguchi, and Inamura. I'm all for that. They should be like a regular group, I feel like. And you might even have Go. Like, you could add Go to this as like the leader or something, or co-leader with Kaito. And we're rocking. Like, this is a cool little group here they have here. And I hope they keep these four together.
Four guys is a perfect amount of people for a stable, in my opinion. Especially if you do it like this. I've talked about that with the group that Shun Skywalker now has in Dragon Gate 2. You have a tag team with Kota Minura and Jake Lee. Then you have an upcoming guy, Jason Lee. Sorry, then you have
Jake Lee left All Japan to join Dragon Gate.
So much about him. you have an upcoming guy with a Dragon Dyer, and the quote unquote established guy with a Shun Skywalker, and it's somewhat similar here. Even though Shuhei Taniguchi is not that established, but he's a veteran. And then you have a tag team with Kato Kiyomiya and Daiki Inaba, and the young up and coming guy Yoshiki Nomura. Four guys. One tag team, two singles wrestlers is, in my opinion, a perfect amount of people for a stable.
Yeah, like I said, I think so too. Like, I mean, they could even. I mean, I'm sure they'll probably throw some juniors in or something at that point, because like whoever doesn't have a faction or whatever, I'll throw in there. But these guys, they could all go together. You know, Taniguchi and Inamura are both like the muscle guys, the power dudes. Taniguchi could do some technical wrestling too. Kaito and Inaba, great pairing there. You know, former ace of Wrestle 1 and the new ace of Noah, pretty much. So you got like a good little vibe here. I think these guys actually all go well together. I like them. I like the match too. I really like seeing Funaki, by the way, and the IMS Alliance too. I think he's really, his big matches in Noah so far have both been, he's shown that he can be an asset to this company, somewhat similar to Sakuraba. And I think he's a good signing for Noah, and I hope they keep him around and give him maybe a spotlight match or something like that, because I think he can really get over and do a great job.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I like seeing Funaki around. I just hope he'll get to do more in Noah than just these six-man tags. All right, now from here, Dylan, there's only one thing left to talk about on this show. The main event of Noah the Best Final Chronicle 2020 and the main event of this episode of the Eastern Lariat Show. Goshi Ozaki defeated Takashi Sugiura in 51 minutes and 44 minutes, a rating of 9.5 based on 69 votes on Cage Match as we're speaking. An incredible display of violence, an incredible display of just being a fighter, and an incredible display of being an incredible character in pro wrestling too. Because Goshi Ozaki, we've talked about his reign on the last show, and we've put over his reign. This has to be one of the greatest GHC heavyweight title reigns in modern history, if not the greatest. And on the other side, there is this 52-year-old man. I think he's 52 or 51? 50. He's 50. He's turning... He turned 50 this year, earlier this year. Takashi Sugiura. Against this 50-year-old man that labels himself as the killing machine, that went against the champion that clearly, again, fought from underneath. And Goshi Ozaki is absolutely great at that right now, because I guess he's clearly really hurting, but he's also able to, we talked about that in the Nakajima match, he's also able to, as a fan, drag you into believing this pain that he is in, and to feel the emotions that he is feeling, that are going through his body, from being on the ground to being up on top and winning the match with the short-range lariat. This, more than anything, in my opinion, was a match that was about to hammer home the fact that Goshi Ozaki is the best wrestler of the year in Japan. And I guess he is, right?
Yeah, I think that's definitely should be said. You know, we talked about it last episode.
Yeah, we can basically reiterate what we said about Shiozaki in this reign.
Yeah, you know, same thing. The only difference is the last episode we talked about the Nakajima match, and you know, I was like, yeah, that was a great match, but at first I was a little tentative calling it a match of the year level match. And, you know, you kind of talked me into it by the end. I was like, yeah, they had the interruption with the Bima and all that that kind of soured me. But, yeah, you're right. It was a main, you know, top-tier caliber match. You don't have to convince me. Like, this was the match of the year. Like, this Sugiura match. Like, this time that doesn't need any convincing. Like, this was the match of the year, in my opinion. I think that this is going to be number one on my countdown at the end of the year. And I absolutely thought it was a fantastic masterpiece of a match. It was like... The way they wrestled it was too, like, it was almost like they brought their entire history into the match at the same time. It wasn't just, okay, let's hit each other hard. It's like they were bringing their entire feud. And I was looking at the cage match rating when we were talking about this now, and credit to user CJD on Cage Match, and he mentioned in his review that it was the 10th match that these two have had rated 7.5 or higher on Cage Match. 10 matches in their rivalry.
Right. That's crazy high.
Yeah, exactly. And this one might be the highest of them all at 9.5. And I think you can make the case here. Sugiura once again proved himself as, you know, one of the best workers in the world in his own right. You know, Go has had the best year because he's had the opportunities. But Sugiura is just as great, in my opinion, as Go. Even at 50, or if you want to call him 50, some people say 51 and 52, others say 50. But regardless, whatever age he is, even when he's 51, even when he's 60 probably, he's still going to be a great freaking worker, and I'm always going to love watching him. Like, one of my absolute favorites of all time, and he proved it again as, like, a true in-ring legend. And Go, what can you say about him? Like you said, we talked about this already 2 weeks ago, and it just got even more cinched in here. Where that Go, his title reign's awesome. Love the matches, and I think this was his best match. Like, his crescendo of the entire title reign. Just, I honestly thought it was one of the best matches I've seen in years. To be honest with you, like I thought it was a great, great, great match.
I even struggle to really point out to any specific moment in the match, because it all felt like it was part of a bigger story, as you said. This was the 10th match rated higher than 7.5 of the two. And it was basically all about who is the tougher guy. The tougher guy in the end was Goshi Ozaki. But it's not like that it was really a decisive finish. It was more of a finish that it felt like it came from exhaustion, because he finished him with this lariat where it seemed like that Goshi Ozaki was more like falling forward than really hitting this lariat and landing on Sugiura to pin him in the end. So that again then played into the story of the match being so long and so hard-hitting.
Yeah, absolutely. And they had great callbacks too, like of their big match like 10 years ago too, where they had it, or 11 years ago, excuse me, where Sugiura won the title from Go and ending Go's first title reign.
Ah, yeah, right.
Yeah, it was 11 years to the day, 2009, December 6th.
Yeah.
So they played into that. Like, this was... See, I think this match had even more story than even you knew about to it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. There were so many intricate layers to this when you look at this match. That's what made it so great to me, was that it wasn't just about the hard-hitting and all that. I mean, we've seen a lot of great hard-hitting matches, especially from these two over the years. I think you could definitely categorize these two as one of the heavier hitters of wrestling, pretty much. But there were so many intricate parts of this match. If you go back and watch that old match, you'll see some stuff that they pulled out here, too, all this time later. And I thought that was so brilliant that they made this match. And I think it's clearly why they did it on this day, on this night, where you had a match 11 years ago, same as his first reign, which a lot of people say was not a success, his first title reign. And it wasn't his fault. I think a lot of people accept that, too. But also, people know that he didn't become the star that he should have off of that reign because of all kinds of things. But here, Go now with his signature title reign. I think we can agree that this is what he's going to be remembered for in his career, like this title reign of the GHC title. Could it have ended again with the same guy as his very first one all those years ago?
Huh.
And they played it perfectly into this match.
They did. I don't want to sound like I remember the match that you just recalled, but I can absolutely see the history there between the two, of course. So
yeah. I watched it before.
I did not. So.
Yeah, but before this match. But like I said, you could go back and watch it. That was a great match too. But not as good.
But even without that, I was sitting here in awe and just following along everything they did in the match, and yeah. Just outstanding stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, and this one had a much more positive ending for Go, like that he finally overcame those demons of all those years ago, and you know, just a great rivalry, underrated rivalry. You know, just like CJD said on the board, that these guys had a great feud, great rivalry, and one of the more underrated ones in Noah. And yeah, like to me, this was the match of the year. What do you think about the idea? Because we brought this up last week or last episode too, where a lot of people think, and I think we can probably agree that this is probably true, that his title reign was about Go getting the MVP of the Tokyo Sports Awards.
Yeah.
Have you changed your mind? Do you think
it's
still going to be Naito?
I think it would be even dumber to put Naito on top now.
Yeah, now it'd be really stupid.
I still haven't ruled that out, because this award for so many years has been so New Japan focused that I just have a hard time imagining them giving it to anyone else.
Oh yeah, I completely understand that reasoning. Like, I know in your heart you know that that Go is. Like, yeah. You're not saying that Naito is better than Go this year. Hopefully nobody would say something like that. But you know, you see how the politics of it work. You know, but we'll see about it. I don't want to declare anything too soon. But I think Go should definitely be very, very popular in awards time. And I really want to believe, like, this year is not a normal year. Like, all the other years were one thing. Naito lost to Evil. Like, whatever way you want to say it, like, you can't say that he's had a better year than Go. Like, come on, give my guy props, Striga. He deserves, not you, but like, just, I'm shouting out to the void right now of Tokyo Sports. Tokyo Sports, if you have any representatives, give my guy props. Go is the MVP and the Wrestler of the Year. And all the other awards, you should just give him all the awards, I think. Fighting Spirit? Does Go deserve that?
Definitely.
Yeah, Fighting Spirit. What are the
best
other awards?
Best Tag Team, of course.
All of them, of course, obviously. Axis, you know, he had that. That would be interesting to have, like, a feuding tag team win the award at the end of the year. That would be an interesting photo shoot you could have. But all of them, you know, special award, give that to Go, too.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? But, yeah.
Best match? Best bout?
Best bout, yes. That definitely should win this, I would say. Or this definitely should win that. Just, moral of the story, please watch this match. Like, even if you're not a Noah fan. Please watch this match. Like you don't even have to watch the match. It might be a little better if you watch the old match that I talked about. You know, it's very easy to find online. Just give it a watch and then check this match out because you'll love it, man. And even if you don't watch the old match, you'll still love this. Just like Striga said, you could just be in awe of the performance of these two guys. And you know, I think that this match is getting so much buzz that there will be new fans because I mean, what an introduction! What an introduction to a promotion this match is, I feel like.
And it really helps that you can now watch the Abima TV airings outside of Japan for free, too.
Yep, absolutely. Great deal for Noah to be on Abima TV. Really cool stuff. Like you said, you don't even have to have Wrestle Universe for this. Just go on Abima. You can watch it. It's right there. It's right there for you. They didn't even break it off like the Nakajima match in the last 5 minutes.
Right.
You got to see the whole match. So, like, please watch this because it was a tremendous match.
Also, another shout out to Mark Pickering. He was, again, doing commentary for the fight site. Once again, I said it last time. I chose the free Japanese airing over the pay-per-view English airing. That is understandable, I think. And we talked about that last show, too.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, Dylan, I said this was the main event. But the real main event followed
next?
After the match. Finally. It finally happened what I've been calling all year long. And throughout the matches that he had won against Katsuki Yumiya and Shuhei Taniguchi, of course, Keiji Muto. I was going to say walked to the ring, but you can't really call that walking what he did. He was kind of stumbling to the ring, going into the ring. No disrespect for Keiji Muto, but this guy is just not able to walk properly anymore. So he came to the ring and challenged Go Shiozaki for the GHC heavyweight title. And that match is happening at the return of pro wrestling Noah to the promised land, to Tokyo Nippon Budokan in February of next year. Dylan, what did you think about when at the beginning of the show they announced that they would be returning to Budokan?
Yep, we talked about that the last episode too, and I think we all kind of had a feeling that this was going to be it, and I was very happy. It was a big deal for Noah. A promise that was made 2 years ago by Kenno, finally coming true after all of this, that Noah would go back to the Budokan, and here we go. Like they did it. So we have to give them props for that. You know, whatever you want to say about, you know, Noah has its greatness and its craziness with the juniors, but whatever you want to say about the company, positives and negatives, whatever, you have to give them credit. Last year, they ran Sumo Hall, and everyone thought it was nuts, and it turned out to be a big success. And now they finally achieved what, like they stated a goal 2 years ago and they've achieved it. So I think you have to give this company a lot of credit because you know, that's not something you see a lot at the time. The last time I remember something like that happening was like when Shiraishi was in All Japan and he promised to run the Tokyo Dome in 5 years after he bought All Japan. That was not a successful goal that he set for himself. And here we had it with Noah and it actually worked. So that's very cool. I think a great story, too, because I think a lot of people probably doubted that would ever happen. You know, I bet when they said that, there were some people that said that they would never go back to Budokan Hall, well, you know, for Noah. And they ended up doing it within 2 years and pretty fast turnaround, too. So I think that's a great news for them and deserved because of the performance of Go. But that's about the positives end when it comes to Noah because we have to talk about who's in the main event of that show.
Yeah, Keiji Muto. It's going to be Goshi Ozaki against Keiji Muto on February 12th of next year. And what's happening? Is he winning the title?
I can't imagine that. I mean, I can because it's Muto, but I really am having a hard time thinking that they're going to end this reign for Go in Budokan in the main event. The guy whose motto is "I am Noah." It just doesn't make any sense to have
right. Like, that is a very good point.
It's kind of funny to think about. Like, this would be stupid and crazy, but in reality, the way they've set it up, the way they've played it out, I think that they probably see this as a big win for Go. Like, if he can beat Muto in this match more than anything. But, you know, you can't count him out, though, because of how Muto is, you know, his political nature of things. So you can't
count
him out.
That's the one thing that gives this match intrigue, right?
Yeah, it does have intrigue in that way. It's not going to... I mean, it'll be a cold day in hell before that match is even close to as good as the Sugira match that we had here. It will likely not even be comparable. But... like you said, there is drama involved in it because everyone will believe Muto can win, despite him being 58 years old at the time. So I just think that it's not what I would have done. It's not what I wanted. And I'm not even certain. Again, I've said this all along. I'm not certain that he's a draw for Noah. Like, I don't think there's any evidence of that we've seen so far. And I'm not sure that this is what I would have done. Like we saw last time with Kaito and Kenno, that worked in Sumo Hall. And that's something that the fans wanted to see. Are the Noah fans really going to flock? We had a conversation on Twitter with a guy who responded to us after the show. And his point was that this was all, like, Muto was all about appeasing Abima. Like that's his purpose in Noah. Which is logical. But this isn't about Abima now. Like, we're trying to draw in Budokan.
I think another point that the user on Twitter made, I just don't have his handle right now, was that Muto is more for the casual viewers, and I can see that, especially for a free airing on Abima TV, having Keiji Muto's name on there can cater to to a casual fan who just sees this name and maybe just checking out Pro Wrestling Noah for the sake of that.
That is a decent point as well. It's not really for the Noah fans, for the casual fan. That's great. But again, I think in this particular case, with how they booked them, like on a normal show, yes, you can make that case. And they've done good numbers on Abima too. And if you want to credit Muto with a part of that, that's fine. But now, like I said, it's not about Abima. It's not about the casual fan. It's about trying to draw in Budokan Hall bigger than any place they've been in years and years. Mm-hmm. And even with the pandemic, like, that's still going to be bigger than anywhere they've ran. You know, if it's only 6,000, that's still more than they did even in Sumo Hall at full capacity. So, like, now they have to worry about actually drawing as many fans as possible. And is Muto the right guy for that in Noah? Maybe. Like, I'm not saying that it's not true. But to me, I've always said that I don't think he's a draw to Noah fans. On Noah shows. And they're casual fans, whatever. But, like, will they buy a ticket to this show? That's something that I don't know. And I mean, I guess we'll find out. It depends on the card too. Maybe they could stack the card, you know.
I was going to ask, what else is there they can do?
Well, there's going to be a national title match.
Well, sure, but I'm talking more of a match that would also cater to maybe more casual fans.
Chono, Hollywood Jurina, they teased her having a match. I could see that. I could see her having a match on that show. Otherwise, I mean, I don't know who is going to be, but they're going to stack their, you know, they're going to stack their show.
I mean, we've played around with this name on our show before, but what if they talk Kawada into doing one match?
That's always like my go-to for these big shows is Kawada. I also want to praise the user on Twitter and shout him out is at Desiccated Veins, Nigel.
Shout out
for that. Yeah, so he made that point on Twitter to us. But yeah, Kawada coming back, that would be really cool, and I think that would be actually bigger for Noah than Muto if they could get Kawada. He has much more of a history with Noah and obviously Misawa, their rivalry and all of that. You could tell some stories. I don't see that happening, to be honest. You know, he it's getting to the point now, he's older and hasn't wrestled in all these years. you know, I think I started saying that around 2016, 2017. Mm. That's like 6 or 7 years after. I could still kind of talk myself into that. 11 years after his last match, and he, you know this guy's in all sorts of pain, probably.
Yeah, he wouldn't need to do a singles match, of course.
Yeah, but I mean, he's probably not even in wrestling shape anymore.
No,
Yeah, I think that's a tough sell, but I mean, anything's possible if they I mean, they have the money if they want to just buy him to come in to sell the show out for props or whatever, they could do it. But for whatever reason, I'm just not sensing that. I think they would have teased something by that by now if that would have happened, because how are they going to do that like a month out and just say like, "Oh, Kawada's back"?
Yeah.
Like, that's not something you could just roll out just randomly, you know.
Right.
So I don't see that personally.
What about your idea that you had for this year, the 20th anniversary of the split of Pro Wrestling Noah and All Japan Pro Wrestling? Can you see All Japan playing a role on that Budokan show?
That would, see, as a fan, I would like that. Again, there's no real teases of that we've seen at all, to be honest. So I don't see that. I actually don't think that would even matter that much.
Hmm.
If you had Kento in a big singles match, that would do something. But other than that, I don't think it would matter.
Yeah, so it will be really interesting to see how Pro Wrestling Noah approaches this Budokan show, because they really have to stack the deck.
You could have Akiyama on, bring him in from DDT.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah. Have him do a match on the show. You could put that in the undercard. You know, you have a big national title match, Akiyama singles match, the main event, Jarina match, and maybe do something with Shono that they teased already. Have him do a six-man tag or something. Or have the IMS Alliance have a tag match, him and Mara Fuji and somebody.
Yeah, you could do that. You could really do that. Akiyama is someone that I, for whatever reason, have not thought about. But he's there in DDT. I think he's there for doing a match for Noah. Why not? Even though, to your point, they have not teased anything in that direction either.
No, no DDT involvement really since they had that little split, like the very short lived, the glorious 2 weeks, just like Momo tags. the glorious 2 week feud between Noah and DDT they had.
It was not really Noah and DDT, it was Congo and DDT more.
Yeah, well, you know, whatever. It didn't last long. either way. So who knows what it was or what it was going to be, but. You know, that would at least, they could have a history with that. They could do a match with, like, Akiyama and Mara Fuji, you know, a playoff history with Akiyama and some of these guys if they wanted. But, I mean, who knows? Like, maybe it won't happen, but I think that's probably that's more likely than, like, Kento or Kawada showing up.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. What about Kensuke Sasaki? Another retired guy.
That's true. He retired. He's never came back, really, after his retirement. His shocking retirement.
Nobody really figured that would be his retirement, but he just said, that's it.
Yeah, totally screwing over Nakajima. Like, his first ever big win over his mentor, and immediately, like, by the way, forget about that loss. I'm retiring, guys. Yeah. And Nakajima just stared at him like, what? Sasaki was like, what do you say, man? Put her there, buddy. And Nakajima just looked at him and didn't shake his hand. It was like, what are you talking about, dude? Like, what? It was one of the most awkward moments, because it's clear Nakajima didn't know this and was probably very mad about like that his spot was stolen by this guy. But regardless, it all worked out for Nakajima in the end, and Noah. That would be interesting. You know, and that would make sense. Again, they could play off history with Nakajima if they wanted to do that. But it's hard to imagine somebody coming out of retirement like that. But, you know, it would be cool if that happened.
Right.
And with Shono, you could have a match. You could have a feud with Sasaki and Shono.
Yeah, or with Kobashi and Sasaki.
Kobashi's not coming out of retirement.
No, but it's Shono.
Like what?
Is Shono coming back, basically? Because much like Kawada, he hasn't wrestled in a long, long time.
That's true, but he's more like, he wrestled Shiraishi. He'll do anything. Like, remember that in All Japan?
Oh, sadly, I do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we wish we could forget. There are way too many Shiraishi references on the show, but yeah, like he'll do anything. I'm sure you can convince Shono, and they already teased that anyway. Like I said, they actually did that already, so I can buy that, like a Nakajima and Sasaki team versus Chono and somebody. Or maybe Sasaki and Shono teaming up. You know, why not? We have New Japan legends up and down the show. Like, bring them both in and face Nakajima and, you know, face Nakajima. And it would be better if Sasaki and Nakajima teamed up, to be honest with you. Just let Shono team up with somebody. You could have an impromptu singles match with Nakajima and another guy and just have the old guys tag in, you know, to have their little spots more so, I think would be the best idea. You know, I don't know who Shono would team up with. I got Marufuji, the M's Alliance.
Yeah, we're kind of just rambling around with this card because it's hard to imagine what they will do on their own to put on a show that is fitting for Budokan. But man, look at the card New Japan has for Budokan.
It'll be better than New Japan's.
The standards are pretty low when you look at that card.
Like I was telling you off the air, it, like the pandemic rules are obviously terrible in the grand scheme of things. But kind of a blessing for these promotions that feel like they could just put on anything. It feels like in Budokan, it's like, well, we don't have to sell out, so we could give it a shot now. Like, maybe we could do this, and we don't even have to try in New Japan's case. You know, like, let's put the freaking Gorillas of Destiny in the main event of a Budokan Hall. Sure. Like, why not?
Well, I guess that's it for now. Dylan, I guess you want to shout out the patron again because you're doing the Lord's work up there so that I don't have to follow along with the World Tag League and the Best Wrestler Junior at the same time.
Yes, exactly. Like, if you don't want to watch these boring leagues that New Japan's running, tune into the Patreon, patreon.com/EasternLariat. I'm covering everything. I've covered all the tournaments, the DDT, All Japan, their real World Tag League, and the fake World Tag League that New Japan is running as well. The Best of Super Juniors, I've watched every single match of the tournament, and I'm going to do the show live, or maybe not live, but after the show ends on the Budokan show. Spoiler alert, if you haven't seen any of those tournaments, it's going to come down to the Gorillas of Destiny and Finjuice, as well as Hiromu Takahashi and Desperado. The tag team, I think that's what everybody kind of predicted. Desperado making the finals was a little bit of a swerve, I would say. I thought Sho was going to be in there, but they've decided on this. They've decided Desperado could be a main event level talent for Budokan Hall. And we'll see how it pans out. I mean, I haven't loved the tournament, but maybe we'll have big matches. You know, they'll save the best for last, just like the Real World Tag League. The final match was the best match. Maybe they'll do it here. There's been some good matches on the tour. I don't want to completely bury them. It's just kind of like the All Japan Tag League. It's mostly just ho-hum and kind of boring to watch.
Yeah.
But there's been some good performances. I've liked watching Doki. Like his, you know, he went from somebody I never really expected to do anything great, but now he's really proven that he's a good talent in the juniors. Sho has had great work. Robbie Eagles has really impressed me as well. You get to see Waimura, good young lion, on there. So it's like you've got guys. Like even Bushi wasn't that bad compared to usual on this tour. But it's not what you want out of a tournament like this in New Japan. Like, you know, like last year's and all the other years were a lot better than this year at the end of the day. It's just there's no buzz behind it, no excitement, no energy.
That's what it feels like. I've only checked out a couple of matches, but there's no excitement in the air, no buzz whatsoever. And that's what's lacking so much, especially because you can point back to previous tournaments and say that New Japan knows how to create buzz for a big tournament, but they just don't.
Yeah, I think they're in a tough spot with this lineup they've had because basically we've seen all these matches before. And outside of the Wato, you know, the Wato matches, which nobody would even want to watch any of those anyway. So, you know, you're like, you know, that's the only fresh person we have, and he's probably the worst guy in the whole tournament. So you don't have any exciting matches, not like when Shingo first came in. Even when Ishimori debuted, he had a hot run when he debuted in New Japan. But there's nobody like that this year. You know, and even like Hiromu, and he's probably the, you know, everybody thinks is the best worker, and I agree. He's probably like the, you know, one of the best in the whole company, never mind just juniors. There's a feeling that he's kind of just like, you know, he's not going through the motions. Even going through the motions for him is still some great matches, but he's not at the level he was, you know, a year ago. so to speak, or anything like that, or, you know, doing stuff in some of his biggest matches, you know, in their past. Like Hiromu and Ishimori, like, their first match was an amazing match of the year level, and this was a great match they had, but it wasn't at that level at the end of the day. So, you know, there's nothing really to stand out there. You got some good matches. Even the tag league, you had some good performances. We got Goto Yoshihashi. Finn Juice is always a good team. You know, there's been some decent little performances. Even the Ishii team with Yano has been pretty enjoyable, all in all. But it's just, again, like, no buzz. And, like, even the you know, people coming into the show, if you notice, look at the Cork and Hall show they did back-to-back in the middle of the tour. The juniors did almost 700 fans, and the tag league did, like, almost 100 people less. Like back-to-back shows. Like, they did worse than All Japan's tag league final in Corken. So, like, that shows you, like, the tag league is definitely, like, the fans are not buying into this at all as anything important. And even the junior league feels like, you know, we're just biding our time until Wrestle Kingdom, it feels like, honestly. And we'll see what happens if they just... I think the chalk picks are Hiromu going to the... you know, winning the tournament. But I don't think that's for sure. I think I can see Despero winning because he's never won it before. They pushed him heavily with the interviews. And Hiromu could always... there's always a threat he can move up. So, you know, you never know what's going to happen there.
Yeah, right. But I'm really not high on New Japan right now. So, of course, check out our Patreon. Just as Dylan said, he's doing all the reviews there. Patreon.com/EasternLariat. And except for that, I think we covered All Japan, DDT, Noah. Good overview over the Japanese wrestling scene. And I guess our next episode will be the big year-end awards.
Yes, one of my favorite shows of the year. I always loved our theme episodes. And I'm so excited to go over the full year. We could talk about how bad New Japan's been this year. We could talk about how bad the booking Tajiri's been doing in All Japan is. We could talk about how bad the juniors are in Noah. We could talk about how bad some of the comedy in DDT is. We're going to cover it all on the show next week, but also some good things, like, believe it or not. Yes, like, lots of positives to happen. Who will the MVP be? Who will the best technical wrestler be? Who will the best match be? We kind of already teased it on the show. We kind of spoiled that earlier about that one. But all the other awards are up in the air. Besides the best bout, all the other awards are still up in the air. And we're going to talk about everything. And that's always a show I always recommend to people. Like, if you're kind of just jumping into the world of Japanese wrestling, those are some of the best shows, I feel like, because you get to learn about everything. It's not just New Japan. You know, a lot of these other shows, they'll have one promotion they kind of focus on, a Dragon Gate or a New Japan or a Noah or whatever. Like, but still, you have all the companies represented on the Eastern Lariat show. And, you know, sometimes we give you some deep cuts, too. Like, Striga will break out, like, Tatsuya Hanami or someone like that. Like, a very good two-way W. And I love him too, as well. So, you know, you know, great worker in the indies. And, you know, sometimes we'll get you some stuff, hit you with something that you'd not expect. You know, I might break out a Joshi wrestler that's kind of under the radar too sometimes. So, you know, you get a little bit of everything there. So it's going to be a great show next time. I'm really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. So for now, that's it for the Eastern Lariat. Thank you all for listening and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.